You are listening. I'm going to do that again because Heidi would do it better. You are listening to Right Back At Ya, the 2000s pop music podcast with myself, the Mutia Buena of production, Joel Babington, and the Heidi Range of PR, David Lim. Hello, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good, JB. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, listeners, we've already been chatting for about an hour before we hit that record button, so...
How come I'm the Heidi Range of PR? Is it because I have so much range in what I do?
Exactly that. You brought in to fix a situation. Lovely, bubbly. The thing is, it would be an honour to be referred to as any six of the Sugar Babes. Just going to get that out the door, you know?
Yeah,
in
definitely.
In case anyone's reading that another way.
No.
But... Look, there's loads of like current music to talk about, isn't there?
Oh my God, we've been so blessed. You know, on our last episode celebrating 20 years of Spice Girls Forever, we talked about a bunch of new releases that come out. Even as we speak now, Kylie Minogue and Little Mix's new album have come out, and we've got Steps' album coming just around the corner. So it just feels like in the lead up to Christmas, like... the pop gods are like really, really blessing us.
Kylie, I've got it on vinyl. First ever Kylie vinyl I've got.
Are you being serious?
First ever Kylie album I've purchased.
And was this before you heard the whole album in full? Like you just went and ordered
it? Oh, I hit that on pre-order the day after, you know, the first single Say Something had premiered on Zoe Ball's radio show. I've had that on pre-order for quite some time.
Really, JB? I think you are much... This is probably the first time in history that we're seeing you straight off the gate in there with Kylie's release, and I'm the one who's kind of dragging my feet a little. Like, I waited till I heard the full deluxe edition before I hit order on that CD. So mine is still coming. Has yours arrived already, the vinyl?
Yeah, mine arrived. Vinyl, the Amazon exclusive, the blue or turquoise or whatever it is.
Turquoise,
looks gorgeous.
Turquoise. For those who have heard our Mystique episode, know that it's turquoise.
Apologies, yes.
Very, very happy for Kylie. She's, you know, this is a great comeback for her. So, you know, we're absolutely living for it. And obviously the Little Mix girls are doing really well as well. So, you know, at the time of recording now, we don't know the outcome of this chart battle, so
we don't.
That should be interesting.
It's like VB and SEB all over again.
It really is. You know, what are people gonna rush out to Brent Cross shopping to buy? Can they even buy the CDs? Is it an essential item? Is it available?
Of course it's an essential item. Yeah, to be honest, this is how ridiculous I am. And like, I love Little Mix. I know it's silly, but I haven't streamed their album yet, and I really will, but I'm just waiting for this week to go out the way to help Kylie Anne, just because I feel like
gotcha.
Little Mix are so current and popular. And obviously Kylie is timeless and hugely popular. Mm. But it's because Kylie would be the first either artist or female artist to have a UK number one album in like 5 decades or something.
Ooh.
But even if she doesn't, she's got 10 years to get a number one album.
But we want it at the start of this decade, yeah.
Start off strong.
Exactly. Start as you intend to continue, Kylie Anne. So yeah, you know what? For me, listening to disco, I really enjoyed it. But I just have to remind folks out there that there is a very compatible sister record to disco from Danielle Jane Minogue.
Literally a sister record.
Literally a sister record titled Club Disco. So once you're done with disco, switch on over to Club Disco. You know, it's a little more poppers o'clock. It's a little more gay rights. Yeah.
You've got Kylie's disco while you're drinking the wine, it's settling in, you're having a groove.
Mm.
And then, you know, you get the poppers out the fridge, put on Club Disco, take your clothes off and just go for it in the living room.
And just go for it in the living room. Yeah. So we just want to say, obviously, to everyone listening, thank you so much for all your love and support for our last episode, the Spice Girls 20 Years of Forever one.
So yeah, thank you so much, everyone listening, for that. I hope you enjoyed our ramblings about Forever. It was so much fun to go into it.
And you know, we always say there is usually a track that we're not fond of at the time of recording that we come around to later. JB, have you changed your mind on any Forever tracks?
I have, David. Every day since we recorded, I think about the song Time Goes By, and I give it a good sing-along to as well. It's actually now a standout on the album for me.
Wow.
Like this album, I haven't changed my mind on oxygen, but everything else is like chef's kiss.
I wasn't the warmest on Weekend Love, and you were like really, really up for it, really loving it. But, you know, I've spent a bit more time and reappraised it this time around, so I can embrace it a little bit more. Speaking of embrace, we want to say thank you, obviously, to everyone that's been leaving 5-star reviews for us on Apple. Leaving reviews like this and, you know, giving us a good rating really helps with our visibility on the platform and helps the podcast be seen a little bit more as well. So thanks for doing that, everyone. And we'd like to read you a review. So, Joel, this one is from Kelly in Leicestershire. Oh, my God. And Kelly says, the joy, the capital letters, joy, these boys have given me via this podcast is indescribable. In these dark times, this is exactly what a pop-loving millennial needs to get through these days. Thanks so much for all the lols. Big love heart emoji from Kelly in Leicestershire with 2 kisses. Big kisses to you, Kelly. Thank you so much. And so happy that it's doing it for you, because it is doing it for us as well. This little bit of escapism.
Big kisses to you, Kelly. Thank you so much. It really is. Like, this is, it's just meant to be a bit of fun, but if it can give you some escapism and stuff, then that is absolutely wonderful. And that's what it does for me. And I'm sure that's what it does for you too, David.
Yeah, absolutely. So guys, what are we here for today, Joel?
We are here for, if you've not read the title and you've not heard what we were saying earlier, we are here to talk about one of the definitive girl bands of the UK and one of our best loved, and it's about time. Now, that isn't the girl that we're talking about, but it's an overdue, should we say. We are here today talking about the Sugar Babes.
Yes. Now, talk about one of my absolute favorite girl groups of all time. Like, you know, Girls Aloud, Sugar Babes, Spice Girls. I will never, ever get tired of the body of work they've produced. And also, like, come on, have to say, people listening who laugh at us saying body of work, it's just, we're just going to give it to you now. We're just not going to apologize for it.
Well, yeah, because, like, sometimes I listen back and I try and, like, stop. I try to stop saying things that I say all the time. So I genuinely thought I'd stopped saying body of work. And then someone said, take a sip every time, you know, I say it. And I'm like, oh, did I even say it? But sure, cool, whatever. I think, David, I think you could just compile words from me now at this point. You could do a record and then just take clips of me to put around it.
Yeah, really strong body of work. What's another thing that you like to say? Edge.
Edge. You
know, we can edit that in. We can splice that in. What else is there? A really present vocal. That's another JB classic.
Prominent vocal.
Prominent vocal, very present vocal. Those kind of interchangeable.
Bop. Poppers. Bop.
Yes, poppers, all that. There you go, guys. We've done the review. That's the episode.
All right. See you next week. So, yes, there is no denying how, and to be honest, I think, obviously, to everyone that listens to our podcast, you know how beloved they are. We don't need to tell you. But I do think maybe they're slightly, sometimes their legacy isn't as remembered as, say, maybe the Spice Girls and Girls Aloud and All Saints. I think there will be a time again when there is. But, you know, it's just like everything comes through in waves, and then there'll be another greatest hits or their next tour or a celebration or a documentary, and everyone will really remember, like, as in, by everyone, I mean, you know, like
the masses,
mums at Tesco.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think also with Sugar Babes, all the members have gone on to do their own things, but also they've kind of gotten on with their lives, and not all of them are in the public eye anymore. So, you know, there's not that kind of constant reminder. But that is exactly what we're here to do. We're here to fly the flag for the girls.
That's exactly what we're here to do. I have to say, last year I saw Mutia perform at the RVT, and it was one of the best things ever. Like, I'm just so happy I went. You know how we feel like we've grown up with these people because they're so present in our lives, and especially as pop fans, you know, such people, like, their music is what we've turned to along the way in our lives. I was right at the front. I've probably had a bit to drink, but not too much because it was quite early. She came out, she started singing Real Girl, and I had to stop myself from bursting into tears.
Oh no, was it an emotional moment?
Every time I hear that song, for some reason, I like get really choked up. I think because she's just such an amazing singer, and that I don't know, maybe that song came out in a weird time in my teenage years or something.
There is no denying that Mutia Buena is one of the finest vocalists that Britain has ever produced, and it's such a shame, and it's pure robbery that she doesn't have a big solo career, because she does have a once-in-a-generation kind of voice. You know, I see Mutia in that light, definitely. And it's very telling. You know, this is not a Mutia solo episode, but it's very telling that her debut solo album had George Michael on it and fucking Amy Winehouse, okay? Mm. So legends only coming in to play with Mutia. So that
legends
tells you.
Only.
The reason why we're doing this episode at this point is because this very month is 20 years since the Sugar Babes debuted with their first album, One Touch. We can't cover all of the Sugar Babes in one episode, so we're just going to break it down. This episode, we're going to touch on their first two albums, so that's One Touch and Angels with Dirty Faces. And already iconic in this era, because we're seeing not only the group go through their first lineup change, but also their first big hits. So
it's going to be great. Look, get a cup of tea, get a glass of wine, and let's get into it. You know what I mean?
So yes, we are celebrating one of Britain's most successful girl groups of all time, and definitely an iconic part of the noughties, the Sugar Babes.
I thought we were doing Daphne and Celeste.
The girls have achieved great success for 10 years, scoring 6 UK number one singles and 18 UK top tens. The Sugar Babes have released 7 studio albums and the greatest hits, amounting to 6 UK top 10 albums. They have sold over 12 million records worldwide and won a Brit Award. So, as we all know with the story of the Sugar Babes, the infamous lineup changes are almost as famous as the hits, but regardless of which one is your favorite lineup or your favorite member, etc., etc., we love all these girls equally. We love all the lineups, and we're just here to celebrate everyone.
The joy of life is that you can all have personal favorites. We're here to celebrate everyone, and we're here to celebrate the work, the amazing work they
put
out.
The legacy, darling.
A body of work, one might say, but not what I've said. I've just said the work. There was this time in the second half of the 2000s. They were, for me as a young gay man that loved pop music, they were the only band really that were touring and gigging so frequently that it felt like I was always seeing them live. And it was always so exciting.
I've never seen the Sugar Babes live.
Oh, David.
I'm so jealous.
I've seen every lineup of the Sugar Babes live, but I've never seen Heidi, Mutia and Keisha together.
Oh.
But I have seen all 6 members live.
So you've not seen the definitive 2.0 lineup?
No. But anyway, in the words of Hilary Duff, let's go back to the beginning.
Let's go right back to the beginning indeed with the formation of Sugar Babes. Now, the group was formed by All Saints manager Ron Tom and Sarah Stennett. Now, this is a name I was very surprised to see, JB, because Sarah Stennett is a name that I've seen through kind of just work industry-ish kind of stuff. And I wasn't expecting to see her pop up as one of the co-founders or, you know, early days managers of the Sugar Babes, because that's just, you know, she is responsible for managing Rita Ora, Zayn Malik, wow, Jessie J, Ellie Goulding, Iggy Azalea, you know, these types of present day names that I wasn't expecting to see her pop up when we were researching the Sugar Babes.
The creation of the Sugar Babes is the, like, of this time equivalent to what's now.
Yeah. Just cool, yeah.
Just cool.
So Ron Tom, a.k.a. the Sugar Daddy. I did not come up with his name. One of the girls called him the Sugar Daddy or something. It was said in an interview somewhere I read. Decided to create a younger, fresher All Saints. At this time, Steps were doing really well. S Club 7, Westlife, Pop Idol was coming up. You know, it just kind of felt like the market was really saturated with a certain kind of manufactured pop act that you know, they were kind of thinking, what could we do that's different? You know, what, maybe there's room for a credible alternative kind of non-stage school-y pop group. So Ron was already managing Siobhan and Mutya as solo artists. Siobhan's best friend's brother-in-law was Ron Tom, and Ron had met Mutya's father in a supermarket, and he like kind of convinced her that, oh, you know, my daughter can really sing. So he drove around to the house and heard Mutya sing and decided, okay, amazing, I want to work with her.
Wow.
So he had signed Mutya and Siobhan individually as solo artists, and I think story is that they met at an industry showcase that they were performing at, and then after that just kind of thought, okay, we should work together.
Yeah. Did you know at that industry showcase, or one of them, they both sung the same song and they didn't realise they were both going to be singing the same song? And I think Siobhan said, like, Mutya goes out and sings it, and then Siobhan goes out after, sings the same song.
Fucking hell. Do they not have any other CDs?
Ron Tom's just like, I love this track. And it's got your name written all over it. And it's got another girl's name written all over it too. And then did you know, Mutya has also said that when she was younger, she used to sing sort of in a band. I don't think like in a band like the Sugar Babes, but, you know, just sort of at events or whatnot, with Mylene Klass and Vanessa from The Saturdays.
Are they even in the same age range?
I know, that's what I thought. But look, I'm quoting and not questioning.
Mylene, Mutya, and baby Vanessa. This feels like an episode of like 8 out of 10 Cats or something, you know? Or Celeb Juice.
But yeah, I mean,
iconic. So it was Mutya and Siobhan. And then one day, Mutya's best friend, Keisha, comes into the studio just to see, you know, what was going on. And Ron saw them together. And just thought, okay, this is it. You're going to be a band. It's kind of like United Colors of Benetton, and we're going to call you the Sugar Babies. When they signed to London Records, the name was changed to Sugar Babes, you know, just to give them a little bit more, just to make them sound a little bit more mature.
And longevity, thank God.
Yeah, exactly. So the girls left school and had private tuition, and, you know, they just kind of started rehearsing, started working in the studio, writing and working on their sound together. And that was when the Sugar Babes was born.
Meanwhile, across the UK.
Mylene. North. Oh, sorry.
Mylene.
Mutya, why haven't been returning my calls?
I'm busy. You know, meanwhile, someone else in the UK, maybe someone more closer to Liverpool, was very busy doing Atomic Kitten, and maybe we'll get to that later.
Yeah, just a little teaser for you there. So, Joel, we get now to September 2000, the Sugar Babes' debut single, Overload. Train comes, I don't know its destination. It's a one-way ticket to a madman situation. Else like sing that situation, that bit out loud, like, you know, that ad lib that Keisha does, situation, like, I just love singing that bit just in isolation out loud. I remember like once I was in a club in East London with my friend, and he was like really, really drunk, and they played Overload. Even before the bit where Keisha comes on and does a situation, like, he started doing it already from the first chorus. So it just carried on for the rest of the song. And now every time I hear this song, I'm just like thinking of that ad lib. I'm like, aww. I can't wait to do it. Like, when it comes up, really sing it out loud.
What a debut single. And also, where they just get so much bigger as time goes on, it really serves them well. As people like me, I don't recall this when it was originally released.
Oh.
But then when you become a fan, you go back and you're like, that's a great debut single. It becomes a firm favourite straight away, no matter when you come into the babedom.
The babedom. I've never heard of that. I love that.
I think it's a real good mix of, it's audience-friendly pop, but also isn't denying what they are. I think it kind of ticks a lot of boxes.
Even when you listen to Overload today, like, it's got such a really fresh sound. It kind of is a little bit of a nowhere's land between kind of 90s pop, R&B, a little bit of, like, alternative pop as well thrown in there with a really funky groove. Like, it just sort of is lots of different elements, and it kind of never dates, this song. It just doesn't age, does it?
It doesn't. And, you know, it's a little bit rocky as well.
Oh, yeah, that guitar solo in the middle. Yeah, talk yeah. about, like, come on, we're coming for NME readers. Yeah. It's like that time with Dani in All I Want to Do, the video. She starts, like, yeah. you know, doing the guitars, the guitar solo.
Yeah, with the rock god. It has gone on to be a signature Sugar Babes track.
For a first single to make such an impression, I mean, I remember this being a real staple of Australian radio.
Really?
You know? Yeah, yeah. It was always on Australian radio. And I remember seeing the music video as well. I mean, let's talk about the music video, because that in itself was just kind of like, it kind of looked like a baby Topshop commercial, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Lots of different outfits.
This video is like a cooler version of the Atomic Kitten Hole Again video, you know? Simple white backdrop.
There is always the comparisons between Hole Again and this one. So Hole Again came out first, and this one kind of followed a few months after, right?
Yeah, I just think, look, it's a good use of low budget. They're not just stood there singing on a white backdrop. You've been creative. You're getting to know the girls. Mm. It's a nice way into it. You don't need to go for also what I think is probably a choice. They're really young girls. It's giving them a chance to warm up. Yeah. It's only until like their third single that we see like a more elaborate music video.
Yeah, there's a little bit more acting involved. So this is kind of, yeah, it's, I would say the video for Overload is more of a mood board. You know, it's giving you an impression of who these girls are, who they're for. You know, it's got that kind of laid back breeziness, but also this yeah. that kind of girl next door, approachable.
Natural,
that's the key word. Not stage school extra, natural.
I was just surprised by watching it for this, how much Siobhan is kind of like, I mean, I guess in all this album, really, or at least the singles, Siobhan's kind of like the unofficial front woman in a way. Like, especially in this video, it's kind of like young fashionista with the looks and the positions.
Yeah, she's got all the kind of modelly poses.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that kind of breeziness that I wish to have when I'm taking my selfies, and I just will never, ever have that level of effortlessness.
I mean, darling, look, imagine going to stage school for 6 years. Not one little natural bone left. None. That's the first thing that goes. I could only dream of it. I don't know what subtlety is.
So we have to say, Christina Aguilera,
I couldn't believe this,
got into a little bit of trouble with this song.
I could not believe this. This was brand new information to me.
The controversy was that when Christina Aguilera's Stripped album came out, there's an album track called Makeover, which people were saying at the time was sounding very, very much like Overload by the Sugar Babes. And I didn't really hear it. I didn't really pay attention to it, to be very honest with you, at that time. It wasn't my favorite album track, so it was always one that I skipped anyway. But if you go now on Spotify, if you go on Wikipedia, the girls and Cameron McVeigh, who produced the record and wrote on it, they're credited on Christina's track now.
Isn't that absolutely mad? Because it's not like it's the same producers on both songs, is it, as far as I'm aware?
No.
I'm just really curious whether it's just like a coincidence and, like, rightfully so they're credited because it's such a similar sounding
thing. I think
thing.
They got in trouble and then Linda Perry and Christina had it. To do it, yeah.
Do you know what, Christina, we're just going to have to put their names on it. Put it to bed. It's not worth the back and forth.
Is Christina Aguilera's manager the GC now? Is that what it is?
Just right between drags. I thought it over, right?
Listen, Christina, darling.
I've got a better song for you, darling. It's called Dirty. But yeah, what a little bit of pop worlds colliding, eh, David?
It really is. So shall we talk about the chart positions for Overload?
This was a UK number 6 smash hit. Very impressive for your debut single. Number 10 in Scotland, number 2 in New Zealand. We knew we could count on you, New Zealand. 15 in Ireland, 4 in Iceland, 3 in Germany, 2 in Greece, 3 in Hungary. Global.
Global, number 27 in Australia. Overload was nominated for a Brit Award in 2001 for Song of the Year. They were up against Spiller and Sophie Ellis-Bextor, Groovejet, All Saints, Pure Shores. But they lost to Robbie Williams, rock DJ. And it's the third fucking consecutive year that Robbie has won this category.
God, what a sad time in it for everyone. That's like, I'm like that guy that come down with me thing. Well done, Robbie. You've won. What a sad little life you must lead.
So that's Overload, our introduction into the babedom, as the JB would say. I wasn't super conscious, or I wouldn't call myself a Sugar Babes fan at this point. You know, it would take me maybe another year or two before I start to take them, like really take notice of the Sugar Babes.
Well, so everything we're going to talk about for the next bit, I came to later as a 10-year-old at this point. I wasn't hot on these things all the time.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it just takes a few more records and a bit more publicity and promotion for it to really sink in and for you to go, oh, okay. So that was the debut single. And straight off the back of that, they dropped their debut album, One Touch, in November.
Okay, so I think that's quite a wild strategy for a new girl band.
Mm.
For the label to drop the album after one song coming out.
I mean, it was a top 10 hit. I understand the thinking, but I don't know. Maybe they thought it was just a good time to just get it out there before
Christmas. Get it out before Christmas, yeah. But I think logically for a brand new band, you want at least two songs. So you're like, people like want the album because they've loved those two songs, especially because I just don't think enough people would have known them yet. Like, that's what I can't get my head around.
And also, like, they were, it wasn't like they were a touring act already at this point. You know, it wasn't that, who are the Sugar Babes fans, really, that are there to commit to a full album after one single? Do you know what
and
I mean?
Yeah, and it's not like, and so you could say, oh, they're trying to rush it out, but they clearly weren't, because they give this album, like, we still have another two or three singles to come. So what my thinking maybe on the other side of things is Overload is the most smash hits friendly, say, of all these singles to come. So maybe they were trying to get the album out after that because maybe they weren't sure if the other singles
have another moment.
Would get this kind of buzz.
Crossover.
Yeah, crossover, you know.
While the public is looking, let's drop the album, yeah. Fair enough. So on November 27th, 20 years ago this month, the Sugar Babes released their debut album, One Touch. Now, let's talk about the cover art first before we get into this body of work. Now, this is a moody, arty, almost like a Renaissance painting.
I just remember, and this must have been like during Sugar Babes 2.0 because I really knew who they were. Growing up, my mum was a cleaner and I used to follow her around sometimes if I wasn't at school and really like be nosy at all these like lovely houses.
Oh my God, you went through their CD collection.
Oh yeah, CD.
That is the number one thing I do. When I go to people's house, I always look at if they have
what
got if they've got a DVD rack or a CD rack.
Yeah,
that's where
remember
I go
the
to
days
first.
Of CD racks? Like that
yeah,
was
that's
like
where I go to
magnum
first.
Opus.
Yeah, fucking nosy like that.
They had this CD, but they actually just had it on their coffee table. Like, they must have just bought it. So I was, like, looking at it, like, oh, my God. Like, and really, like, taking it in because it was quite different to, like, the Sugar Babes that then I knew.
Were you confused?
I wasn't confused. They always started off with, Heidi, you're the new member. So even if I was coming into the Sugar Babes, I still knew she was a new member. Like, poor Heidi was the new member for the next 5 or 6 years. Like... But yeah, I was just curious is the word.
In recent times, I've acquired a bunch of Sugar Babes CD singles. Basically, there was an eBay seller that was getting rid of a bunch of them. I think everything from the first three albums, I've got CD 1 and 2 off now. So I've had lots of time to study the artwork and the kind of graphic design of this era. And it only just struck me, like, this year that that's a pressed flower on the cover.
Yeah. Do you think it's maybe like, okay, we think maybe these girls are potentially, you know, they're serious enough for, you know, the over 21s. But what can we do to...
add a bit of teenage fun to it.
Yeah. Get a flower on there.
Yeah. But like a withered, dried pressed flower. Yeah. Just edge it.
Potpourri. Yeah, it is. I guess now looking at it, it's a bit like, why is it there? But also, why not?
So shall we talk about the album One Touch? Because for a new group and their debut album, they're still about 14, 15 when they were probably writing this album. The girls co-write all but two songs on here, which is really fantastic.
Yeah, the artistry is strong on this album. There's a reason why This is really beloved by both Sugar Babes fans and people that probably aren't Sugar Babes fans.
Yeah, the kind of, you know, fringe, alternative music-loving people that like the occasional pop album. Like, they would stan One Touch.
Shall we talk about standout tracks?
Yeah, let's do the standout tracks.
I'll be honest, I don't think I love it as passionately as other people, but that doesn't deny that I do think it's a brilliant album. The first standout for me is One Foot In. I think it's a bit rocky.
Oh,
kind of
okay.
Sounds a bit like, it kind of sounds like the David Bowie sample on Samantha Mumba's Body to Body. Obviously, it's not a David Bowie sample, but it kind of sounds like that. Actually, on this track, I thought you could really hear some similarities to how Siobhan sounds to how Heidi is going to sound in the group.
Wow, okay. I have to say, I did not listen to this album until I moved to London. So I think my first immersion into One Touch was probably in the last 6 or 7 years. But I think it really helped that I was kind of here and I was getting more invested into music that was coming out of London and the UK.
Mm. Especially and specifically in the London Records.
London Records, you know, like Holly Valance, you know, those signature London Records stars. Listening to this track, I just kind of got, yeah, this is a very cool, edgy, underground London vibe, you know.
Okay.
If they wanted to, they could have thrown in a rapper in there.
Could have. Didn't need to.
What were the other standouts on the album for you, JB?
So the other one is Same Old Story.
Oh, yes. This is another one of my faves, yeah.
So it's a bit garagey, a little bit yeah. garagey.
Giving and you that two-step beat with, you know, yeah. laid-back, soulful vocals, yeah.
And co-written by Matt Rowe, who, you know, has written...
Spice Girls.
Spice Girls. You know, who... Yeah, there we go. Done. Spice Girls. So speaking of Spice Girls, another standout I had for me was Look At Me. Now, this is not a Jerry cover, but it is a lovely mid-tempo number.
Interesting. You know what, JB? I thought we might have picked the same songs as our highlights, but we've not had very much crossover.
Can I say two more? All right, it's like bingo, isn't it? God, I sound like Jerry then. It's, you know, it's like bingo, isn't it? You know, you sort of like pick a song and just go for it. Do you know what I mean? I actually think I've lost my Jerry impression. It's really sad. I think I've lost it.
You need to reconnect with it.
This is how pathetic my life is in this year. I'm just at home and I like try and do things to myself and I'm like, you haven't got it anymore.
What, you just walk around the kitchen and try to impersonate Jerry?
No, not just Jerry, but like, I don't know. Do you not just do voices at home and say things? Or
no.
Sometimes I like walk around, but like I'll just pretend to be a character, like and so random and weird and silly. And that's just like if I'm on a, like I've had a glass of wine and I think I'm on a roll, which I can appreciate is annoying for everyone else, but You got to live for you, haven't you?
You got to live your truth, honey, yeah.
So no, I do impressions all the time, like on my own. Like how you sing to yourself, I'll also do impressions to myself. And Jerry's disappeared from me, but I'm going to try and get her back.
Or there'll be more content for you on YouTube in the coming weeks, yeah.
PR never sleeps, does it?
So Look At Me is a fave on the album for you.
Not the Jerry cover, but a lovely mid-tempo. All right, so look. Right back at your bingo. I think I'm going to smash it with the other two, if you don't mind me stealing your thunder.
Go on, darling.
All right. So my other standouts, Real Thing.
Yes.
Now, this is the bop of the album, but it's still Jules Holland friendly I've got.
Take give me everything.
that song specifically. Can do GAY, but can also do Jules Holland.
I mean, I don't know if real thing is GAY, but maybe like Cuba.
Yeah, upstairs at Cuba. Well, no, upstairs at Cuba, which is quite boring, but...
That's where I go to sit, darling. You know, that's where you can actually hear people.
Oh, shut up.
Compton's upstairs.
I just spat. I don't know why.
Acoustic set upstairs at Compton's.
Yeah, and then the last one is Promises, which I think is very Sugar Babes. It sounds like very... It's like a... It's a touch. It's a one touch of what the rest of the Sugar Babes might sound like, I think.
The other fave for me is Just Let It Go. Acoustic guitar, really bluesy vibes, R&B rhythms. That is just gorgeous for me. Just let it go. Me when that KFC order didn't arrive from Just Eat and I had to cancel after an hour on the phone.
I had KFC yesterday. Double decker burger.
Oh, duh. Yes.
Well, it's only a limited edition. That's why you got to get it when it's released, haven't you?
Just like that Kylie vinyl.
Yeah, which I missed. That's why I'm trying to convince myself I'm happy with the 10 tracks. I'd pre-ordered Amazon ages ago because I really liked the colour of the turquoise. I'm not going to say turquoise. I'm sorry, David. And then she released this for double the price plus postage. She did release this deluxe blue one, limited to 4,000 copies. So I thought maybe I'll cancel my pre-order and get that. And then I went to do it and the deluxe had sold out and then my pre-order dispatched. So I thought, what will be, will be.
Yeah, just...
So, I'm really dubious to pre-order this Steps album on vinyl. And Adam, if you're listening, because they're going to release a deluxe version of this album again on vinyl. I know it. I just know it. And then I'll be upset.
Mm.
So what should I do, David?
I don't know what you should do. I think you should support your faves where you see appropriate.
Yeah.
Some of us want to go out and get it in the first week to support the chart debut. And some of us want to wait for a different experience and, you know, support in different ways, like a concert ticket or, you know.
I've already pre-ordered the concert.
Yeah.
Pre-ordered, so, pre-ordered, ordered. I've booked my concert tickets.
Yeah.
The songs they've released so far have been fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. You can't fault them. Not any of them. I think we're in our... I know this isn't a Steps episode, sorry, but I think we're in... We've got a really good era on our hands, and I do want that album on vinyl, but I also think they'll release a deluxe edition. So I'm between a rock and a hard place. Anyone, tweet me, DM me, at @Dr_JoelB. Tell him what to do.
Yeah, tell Joel what to do. One foot in the past, one foot in the future, where a re-release might happen. Yeah.
Or get Feifei on here, and she'll tell me what to do.
Feifei. Now back to Sugar Babes, our... You know, we've done a detour of Kylie, KFC, and...
All right, DM
Steps.
Me for David's address and let's bombard him with KFC, unsolicited KFC orders. So this album, what I found really interesting, David, and I think it goes in sync with how we were saying one song than the album for a new band.
Is this the right time to drop the album? Yeah.
9th of December 2000, One Touch debuted at number 77 on the UK album charts and sold 5,510 copies that week. And it kind of lingered in there.
So it reached its peak of number 26 about 5 months after the album came out. Yeah.
So, I mean, that is longevity, which is a good thing.
Yeah, but, you know, you look at the big releases on the charts that week that the Sugar Babes debuted. You know, the Beatles' Greatest Hits was number one. Robbie Williams was up there. Westlife, Madonna's album, Music.
Yeah,
Coldplay.
Spice Girls was still with Forever. Had only just come out.
Well, I think Forever had already dropped out of the top 30 by this week. Just saying. So people are in Christmas mode. You know, they just want to buy stuff that feels safe.
Stocking fillers. Stuff that the kids are going to like. Yeah.
Exactly.
If it was released now, the PR would have Chesney on the phone. Chesney, can you do a story about the new Sugar Babes album, please? Get the Appleton sisters on. Girls, can you do a TikTok to overload Melanie Black? Come on, Mel, just do a tweet. Get it out there. Come on, you know. Let's get a support slot for the babes on the All Saints tour.
Yeah. Let's get the Girls and Clara Amfos podcast, you know.
Which they have done now.
They have, yeah.
This lineup. I loved that. If you've not listened to it, guys... Clara, if you want to come on our podcast, we'd love to have you on.
I know Clara, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
A legend.
Oh, now Joel's going to be like, why have you texted her then? What the fuck have you been doing? So, in Australia, the album made number 63. New Zealand, number 16. That's not bad. Germany, number 7.
Yeah, 6 in Austria, 8 in Switzerland. So it's a European smash. They probably then went on a European tour.
Come on, Germany.
Who's ready to get overloaded?
Here comes the chorus.
Obviously, Keisha doesn't really have a solo on Overload. So as a fan that followed them later on, it's so lovely to see that obviously all the times I saw them, she's the lead singer, really, of Overload. She, you know, takes on all the vocals, rightfully so, because...
she wrote it, yeah.
You know, it's kind of her song, really, more than it is anyone else's in other lineups. Are you not drinking today?
I am. I've been having beer this whole time. In a classy... isn't in a classy glass, you know?
Oh, lovely.
It doesn't look like a pint. Yeah, you thought it was apple juice, but yeah, it's actually lager, darling.
Knocking the beers back with the lads.
You can take Dave out of Australia, but he's still here.
Let's get right back to it.
So now we're at 18th of December, the year 2000. Literally, must have been, what, a week away from Christmas?
So the girls are coming in strong at the end of December with not a Christmas song as such, but a New Year song.
But a sort of Christmas song. I'm older than my years. Drowning in my tears.
Surrounded by the fear. Since you went away a year ago at Christmas. Well, do you know what is really refreshing about this is... yes, Christmas is amazing. It's wonderful. It's a fabulous time of year. There's so much joy. But it's also, like, can be really depressing. Like, it's great that there's, like, a song to reflect that kind of feeling
moodiness,
blue at Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have two different types of Christmas playlists like I do?
No, but I think we should have one, actually. I was thinking about that before this.
Because I have my super pop feel good Christmas playlist, you know, the one that I'll put on for the family.
Hilary Duff Christmas album.
Well, no, not quite, but you know, JB, I'll put some Hilary in there, maybe one track. But then there's my other Christmas playlist. Those songs on there are actually a little bit more compelling for me. Like, I love a depressing Christmas song. Is that wrong to say?
No.
Do you know what's a really good sad Christmas song? Kylie's At Christmas.
Is it like crying at the disco at Christmas?
It sort of is, but it's not quite crying at the disco. It's kind of crying at, you know, brunch with family. Like, it's very perky.
My favourite Christmas, like, memory of recent years, of, like, Christmas time, is when we went to go and see Louise and went out after, like, a few days before Christmas. Like, that was, like, the last thing I did in London before going home.
I remember there being lots of gays.
Remember, yeah. And I fell asleep in GAY late. And then I had the S Club 7 Resurrection.
Was that the same night as Louise?
Yeah, we went after. And then I
fell
asleep on the night bus.
That was iconic. I thought you were passed out at GAY. And then S Club 7 came on and, like, this electric bolt went through your body. And you jumped up, like, feet first. And then the rest of the body kind of, like, wiggled up with it. And you were straight in the middle. And, like, I think there were, like, a couple of tourists that were dancing near us. And they just thought, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah,
like,
strangers were saying.
The power of S Club at GAY.
So, here we have this post-Christmas blues anthem. What we do also have here, though, another white backdrop music video, really, in essence, with just more graphics layered over. I don't really like the graphics on it, if I'm honest. Like,
if they had made a fantastic video, even if it was erring on a side of more cliche, like, I don't know, Mutya in a big puffer jacket walking down a snowfield street in Enfield or something, you know, like the girls in different scenarios.
Yeah, like having dinner with friends at Christmas through the restaurant window, but, like, looking miserable, like looking, playing with your food.
Yeah, or on a night bus. Yeah. Wait. Are you thinking what I'm thinking? Like, as in a reverse music video where it starts at New Year / New Year's Eve and it kind of rewinds to Christmas?
I wasn't, but that would be fantastic.
You know how Beyonce, Me, Myself, and I, she's like in reverse. It's all in reverse. That could have been this video. London Records, you should have called me.
Get Australia on the phone. We need this 12-year-old involved.
Shall we talk about chart positions?
So there's a lot of chart positions to get into here. It was at 12 in the UK and 25 in Ireland, full stop.
Do you know what the number one track was that week?
Can I have a hint, please?
It's Young and Fun.
Young and Fun. Bob the Builder. Can we fix it? Yes, we can.
It was Bob the fucking Builder. Number one. Christmas fucking number one. The Sugar Babes was one of only three new songs to crack the top 20 that week. Westlife had a new single out at the same time as well, and they debuted at number two. So they were the highest new entry that week.
Oh, were they with I Had a Dream?
No, it was something called What a Man or something. I don't know.
Right. I think we've spoken about them far too much on this podcast.
Yeah, now. We don't need more time for Westlife. No, I'm here for the Westlife erasure, if I'm honest.
We're blessed with three B-sides on this single.
I feel like we're going to get the more fun moments with the Sugar Babes and the B-sides. Sugar Babes on the Run is
banger.
Banger, babe. Time to turn up the fun, y'all, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it. Sugar Babies on the run, y'all, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it. Now I'm stepping out with my older friends, cause they're over 18, so the party never ends. There's not other ladies, I got the problem, so at least 19, they're pushing the bed. Oh, yeah. Oh, my time, I can live with that. Young and free, I want it like that. And I ain't giving it up. All of these don't really fit on the album, so it makes sense why they are
B-sides. But Sugar Babes on the Run does really feel like a really fun, underutilized moment, especially, as you said, with a self-referential song. There's more they could have done with it. Like, it would have been a great, like, opening number or intro video on a tour.
Yeah, and I don't see enough fans talking about this B-side.
We might be wrong. Tell us if that is a big thing within the babedom.
So then comes April 2001 with Run for Cover. Now, this is another super defining single from the first era of the Sugar Babes. Keep it to myself, keep it to myself.
This song, David, is still a definitive one. I saw the original lineup perform this when I saw them earlier in the last decade.
Oh, just rub
they,
it in.
They still performed with the original choreography, you know, the movement, like the little hip action and stuff they do on this song. I actually found it really sweet that they stuck to it and used it on the quote-unquote reunion tour, if you would call it that. Gorgeous song. And now they have a chance to really come into their own in this much more complex and gorgeous music video.
Like you said before, it's good that they had a bit of time to ease into it and they got to do a bit more performance in this. Just the setup, just everything with this, you know, the girls prowling on the streets at night, everything just looks cool. If we said the first video was kind of baby Top Shop commercial, this is more Doc Martens commercial. This video was directed by Jamie Morgan, a very, very iconic British photographer that emerged in the 80s as part of the Buffalo movement, you know, with Nene Cherry and a very young Naomi Campbell. Like, it's a super cool look, this video. And also, we have to say, shout out to Mutia's auntie hair, because this is like really good auntie hair.
Yeah, we've all been there. And I think from the next album onwards, Keisha and Mutia really get to come into their own with, like, looks and everything, you know? Because it's like, as much as, you know, we joke and, like, would love to have been a teen pop star, like, you would have had a whole lot of awkwardness if you had 14-year-old JB on the mic, you know?
I don't think I could have done Naturel or Subtle.
No, because it's so, like... Because you're so awkward as a kid as well, so you're like, okay, what kind of natural do you want? Do you know what I mean?
Small, medium, or large natural. So, yes, absolutely really, really cool music video for Run for Cover. In Australia, it sort of had a little glimmer of it. It wasn't like a big, big kind of moment for us there, I don't believe. Run for Cover debuted at number 13 in the UK, selling over 64,000 copies. It stayed in the top 40 for about 3 weeks and was out of it by the fourth. Number 17 in Scotland, number 35 in Ireland, number 36 in Australia. Again, we're like struggling to get it in the top 30 for some reason in this era.
Yeah, but at least it's in the Arias. It's good to be there, David. It's good to get a charting position in Australia halfway around the world. You know, not everyone's Steph McIntosh with a top 3 hit on the Arias, you know?
Yes, indeed.
So we're going to go from Run for Cover to the last single of this debut Sugar Babes era, Soul Sound. Impatience, David, this is such a lovely, mellow summer number. What I do love about us doing this podcast is it really makes me listen to songs with kind of open ears for the first time and fresh eyes. And I really, really enjoyed this song. It made me feel like I should be at a barbecue. Like, it feels like it should casually be on in the background.
For me, I feel like this single is very often overlooked and for very good reason. You know, I never really feel any kind of urgency to revisit Soul Sound. Maybe I'm wrong, you know, maybe by the end of this episode I'll come around to it, but...
Well, the song isn't urgency, that's the thing. It's not an urgent, it's not a summer bop. You got your sunbathing in the garden.
It's never been the one for me, and I often question, like, why the hell did they do this? After Run for Cover, I felt like the girl should have just gone and worked on a new album and maybe come out with new material in the summer. But it just kind of maybe felt like Soul Sound was more contractual than it is essential.
Yeah, but if you've got the option for a fourth single, you shouldn't turn that down. You have a really light, nice, summery video from the girls. It's relaxed, it's chilling out. They're doing things that I don't think they would have felt comfortable doing on camera.
It's actually really interesting that you said that, because Keisha said in an interview that this was the moment where she felt like it was the start of their kind of quote-unquote music industry moment. You know, she said, we were told you've got to smile. You've got to be more smiley in the video. When I look at that moment, that was the start of trying to be controlled. Whereas up until that point, we were just being ourselves. I remember them saying, you guys need to be more approachable. The voices that were coming in, the more it was about needing to smile more.
So I want to know what these two All Saints managers were saying during all of this. Were they saying it or was it someone else?
Well, apparently, yeah, it was something management wanted them to record, because Soul Sound is one of the few songs on the Sugar Babes first album that none of the girls wrote on.
So when were All Saints all smiley in their first era then? Or ever? It's ridiculous.
Well, if they were feistier girls, they would have said, fuck off, we're leaving this label.
Soul Sound hit number 30 in the UK charts. Fourth album single, that isn't bad though.
It was the Sugar Babes' lowest charting single at the time. But strangely enough, this single got them nominated for an MTV EMA for Best European Single.
There you go.
Stranger things have happened.
That's what you save till the end of the meeting when you're like, well, it's not all bad news.
Me at every client update. So... lots were happening at this point. Not only is Soul Sound the final single from the Sugar Babes debut album, but it was also the last single we have with the original lineup until they reunited with Flatline many, many years later.
It's a real shame, but Siobhan has to do what's right for her. And we open up to this next era. It's tough because it's like, I adore Siobhan and it just feels so right for her to be back with the girls now. I do think, and they've all said they were kind of like mismanaged at the time and maybe not dealt with correctly, that it felt like life had to happen for it to then be right again. And it just feels so right for now. but the next era that we're going to get into kind of feels so right for then, if that makes any sense.
We're going to see that everything happens for the right reason at the right time. And I think without the changes, without the evolution that this group undergoes, would they have had as much success? And we have to say, by this point of Siobhan leaving, they had been a trio for about 4.5 years. 4 years, 4.5 years. And that's a long time when you start off as kids, you know?
And it's what's sad is that if they started off as kids and then they've always kind of said, especially Keisha and Siobhan, is that it took for them to be adults to kind of have that bond and talk through, you know, kind of rubbish from the past. So it's a real shame that if your kid's going through it, 13, 14 year olds, that you didn't form that bond. It's like how I have no idea how they did it, because if you don't kind of form that bond with people, it's like that's going to make or break you, and
it's really hard to manage
but
that.
I just think it's one thing to be an adult and have a professional working relationship with people. You know, it's like you can go and tour the world and do all these things and it can be demanding and it can be hard, but you're an adult, you understand what it's like to just go in, work, leave. But as a kid, I think that's too tough.
And as a kid that was taken out of school, you don't have your schoolmates with you, you're out of touch with them, all you have are just these three girls, especially at that age where you are maybe still working out your identity, you're trying to work out what it is that you do and where everyone else fits in. It's very, very difficult. And you know what? The fact that the girls decided to continue and find another member is just a testament to them going, okay, we're not giving up. We've had two hit singles. We're going to keep going. But sadly, the Sugar Babes were let go from their deal with London Records. Siobhan, interestingly, kept her contract with the label, but the group was dropped.
Oh, so it was her first album with London Records?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realise that. Okay.
Very interesting. So in comes, here we are, Sugar Babes 2.0.
Heidi Range, the Liverpudlian pop princess, makes her way into the Sugar Babes world. Now, Heidi, while all this has been going on, Heidi has had a busy, you know, career for herself. She was an original member of Atomic Kitten for 8 months. She recorded the album with them and she left Atomic Kitten. What's interesting is if you look at clips back then, she's like, you know, I wanted a more R&B sound. I wanted to take control of the music. But if you listen now, it's just, well, the music was great, obviously, but I needed to leave because, you know, it'd be great to record See You and I Want Your Love. But, you know, when you're part of the Sugar Babes, you've got to say something else. But this girl, you know, trying to break into the industry at 15 in Liverpool, she was going for it and seemed to be busy and having offers and opportunities coming left, right and centre. So she goes from Atomic Kitten to have a solo deal with Stock Aitken and Waterman.
So she actually moved to London at that point to start this journey with Stock Aitken and Waterman as a solo artist. And then that didn't work out. And then apparently from what she said on this podcast, Ladies of Liverpool or whatever it is, the manager of Eternal wanted to sign her. And then she consulted with a music lawyer. And that music lawyer happened to be Sarah Stennett, who we mentioned at the start of this episode as one of the co-managers of the Sugar Babes. And Sarah convinced her not to sign this deal because she didn't think it was a really good deal. And then somewhere down the line, Heidi was about to sign a solo deal to be managed by Sarah. And then that was when Sarah was like, do you know what? One of the members of Sugar Babes just left. Would you consider coming in and auditioning for this group? So Heidi, as she tells the story,
pick up the CD, learn all the songs. One Touch, Mom, is that what it's called? One Touch, One Touch by the Sugar Babes. Do you have that love?
She had to learn the songs overnight and then come in the next day, not only perform it to management or whoever it was, but also in front of the other girls.
And learn a dance routine choreographed by Mutia and Keisha.
Exactly. But she was hired by the end of the day. Basically, she found out she was hired on the way on the train back to Liverpool with her mum.
And had to go back in London the next day.
She had to fucking come back down. Like, honestly, hun, couldn't put them up in like a Premier Inn or something? Like,
And then within the next week or the next month, she was introducing Eminem at the MTV EMAs. Can you believe her?
The crazy life of Heidi Range. Like, it's such a shame she didn't write a book or, like, I don't know, do a blog or something about it at this time. Like, it would have been very interesting to see Heidi's journey.
Oh, she can tell that story whenever she wants. No rush.
She can come on our show and talk about it.
She can come on our show and talk about it. It was really interesting to hear Heidi talk on the Ladies of Liverpool podcast about this in detail. And I actually low-key became obsessed with that podcast. The wonderful podcast has introduced a lot of icons of British culture. Jennifer Ellison, Philip Olivier. It's a real,
Liz McLennan.
Good fun time listen. Liz McLennan, yes. Actual Liz has been on it. So wow. We actually need to get whoever books that podcast to get onto us and help us out. So yes, there's a real change in the waters and Heidi has joined. They're working on a second album. And then they get signed to a new label. So Heidi joined, allegedly, before they were even signed to a new label.
Yeah. So apparently they'd already started working on a second album. And that was when Island Universal came through. Thank God for that. Because honestly, we're about to see a very, very exciting crescendo to the Sugar Babe success story.
Next comes Freak Like Me, the debut single from Sugar Babes 2.0, or the first single from the second album.
Now, this one is a game fucking changer. Let me lay it on the line. I've got a little freaking mess inside. And you know that a man is gonna deal with it. I don't care what they say. I'm not about to pay nobody's way. Cause it's all about the dog in me. I'm gonna freak in the morning, I'm freaking the heat. It really is.
Now, to be honest, David, if I looked back, I always thought Round Round was the first single with Heidi.
Oh my God, I was just about to say. In Australia, anyway, it felt like Round Round was the lead single from this era, not Freak Like Me.
And it's quite interesting that a cover is used as the kind of comeback single.
Yeah, but I don't think, you know, they kind of saw it as we're going to do a comeback and it's going to be a cover. I think it kind of accidentally happened.
Yeah.
It seemed like Richard X had already had this track moving. It was really hot. Richard X had done this mashup of Adina Howard's Freak Like Me with Gary Newman's Our Friends Electric. He couldn't get sign off on Adina to use the vocals for Freak Like Me. So he had to get it re-recorded. And they thought of the Sugar Babes and the Sugar Babes came on board.
Thank God.
And it was a fucking huge hit. This mashup cover was a huge monumental hit. And I think everyone was kind of like, oh, okay, here we go. It's a new era. Sugar Babes are successful. What do we do next? But what a moment this was, because I remember reading lots of reviews where people pointed out, oh yeah, it's a mashup cover. That's why it's really interesting. But me as a kid, I did not know Adina Howard's original and I didn't know who Gary Newman was. So for me, this was like just an original composition.
Yeah, the Sugar Babes were the draw to us.
I would always have that at the back of my mind going, okay, what the girls did here was really cool. But also that was my first time noticing the name Richard X, who would obviously become one of my eternal all-time fave producers.
Yes, of course. And what a blessing for them to have Richard X involved and to get them on this track.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what we're going to see now is like, not just like all of our like God-tier collaborators, but you especially, like Richard X, Xenomania, like one could only dream of.
One could only dream.
So let's talk about the music video. I want to ask you, David, like, what do you think is going on in this music video?
First of all, at the time of this single coming out, I wasn't aware of it. So my exposure to the Freak Like Me video probably came after seeing Round Round and maybe a few singles after that. It's just a really campy way of doing the whole we're initiating a new member into the group kind of narrative, isn't it?
Yeah, campy but stylized. They like spot Heidi on this night out. They kind of then like have a cat fight with her and then it's like she's sort of past the initiation, so they let her in.
Yeah, but you know, Mutya and Keisha are meant to be vampires, you know.
So it's like letting them into like their cult, their whatever, their gang.
Everyone's talking about the lineup change and all that. Although I must say, I think most people would have just gone, okay, whatever. But they seem to make a bigger deal of having a new member.
Everything was like, Heidi, you're the new member. Like, yeah. Heidi was considered the new member right up until Amel joined. And it's like, Heidi had been a member for a long time by then.
She's earned her divaship, hun. She's earned her long service leave, that's for sure. So it was co-directed by one of my favourite music video directors, Sophie Muller, who has done a lot of Sophie Ellis Bex's iconic videos. Gwen Stefani's Cool.
Yes.
She directed this video. And, you know, it was just edgy, but also it was fun. Beautiful. I think for the first time we're seeing the Sugar Babes do fun.
So around this time, I saw a clip when they were promoting this on Pop World. So Simon Amstel, who presented Pop World, goes, okay, we're going to play a game, Freak or Fit. So he listed a bunch of people and they had to say if that guy was a freak, like not hot or fit, hot. And then he listed a bunch off. And then at the end, Keisha and Mutia were more like, you know, we really like bad boys like Nelly, Eminem. And then Heidi just goes, Brad Pitt. I don't think that's a bad boy, Heidi, but it's just so funny because it's like,
bless her, but also very relatable. That's what I would say.
Yeah, Brad Pitt, he's a bad boy. So we must say about this song that The Guardian named Freak Like Me as the best number one single of 2002.
Really?
And NME complimented the track as genius and claimed if this gets to number one, we'll be grinning all summer. Yes, even the critics. And Billboard named the song 45 on their list of 100 greatest girl group songs of all time.
Amazing. Iconic. So, The Sugar Babes' Freak Like Me, produced by Richard X, debuted at number one in the UK, selling over 275,000 copies. It stayed in the top 10 for 4 weeks. It became their third best-selling single of their career, their longest charting single at this point until Push the Button comes along.
Yeah, a great way to say we're back and, like, you know, sorry, London Records, but you lost out.
Exactly. We're back bigger than ever and we're leaning into these cool spaces. You know, we're more mainstream than ever, but still cool and ourselves.
So August 2002, David, here we go. The Sugar Babes release Round Round. And now I'm going to be real with you for a second. I'm going to be completely honest. I think this is the first time I knew of the girls and I absolutely loved it. To me, this was my introduction.
Your baptism into the babedom.
And I knew it wasn't their debut, but it still felt like it to me.
I already knew of the Sugar Babes, but I remember thinking, like, fucking hell, they're not playing around now. Like, this is next fucking level. And I remember just, like, going back to Malaysia on family trips and holidays and stuff, and I would hear it everywhere there as well. So this was a very present global hit.
And I mean, it's still a hit today. It still hits hard. Like, it's still one of the best Sugar Babes songs, full stop. It's definitely like the first song that sets that Sugar Babes template in terms of the, you know,
it's pop, but it's quirky. Yeah.
It's still the Sugar Babes. It's still, but it's Sugar Babes doing pop.
It's a thinking person's pop.
Yeah.
This is the first time that the girls are working with Xenomania. And, you know, in looking back in recent years, I think we always attribute Xenomania as being the girls aloud hit makers, but, and maybe the Sugar Babes leaned into Xenomania after Girls Aloud started. But upon research, I actually realized that, oh shit, actually they did Round Round with the girls before Girls Aloud was even thought of.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry's off auditioning them around the country at this point, so.
Sugar Babes, Round Round, Girls Aloud, Sound of the Underground. They actually reshaped the face of British pop music, really. They made girl groups in Britain cool and exciting again, didn't they?
It's just like, this is surefire, slick pop.
Dynamic.
And this is a music video that you're excited to see when it comes on rotation on the music channel.
This video was on high rotation in Australia. I just remember it. Like, it was cool. And also, it's the first time we saw the Sugar Babes perform in a live band kind of setting in a music video. Because before this, they were all very laid back girls, you know, kind of modeling, kind of posing. But now they're like, we're a live act.
The music video is like a club performance in the desert on Mars. It's very 2002. You see it on so much. Obviously, Britney and Oops, I Did It Again, and Born to Make You Happy, Atomic Kitten in I Want You Love. It's kind of like, where are you? You probably are on Mars. You probably are on Mars. You're probably in a club. You're probably performing. You're probably all of these things.
Mutia's hair was iconic in this video. Heidi with that kind of mohawk style where he's braided on the side and it's like this blonde poof at the top. Iconic.
Yeah. Let's chat about the chart positions of Round Round. Smash hit number one here in the UK. This was, you know, not only are the Sugar Babes back, but if you don't know them, they are solidifying their status as literally top of the pops. Number one in Scotland, number four in Romania, two in New Zealand. We see you, New Zealand. Number two in Ireland. Not cracking that top spot in Ireland. Don't know what's going on there. Australia, we are in at 13. Yes. We are seeing a bit more of the Steph Mac territory.
This is more fucking like it, Australia, number 13. And you know what? It's really amazing, I think, for the narrative in the UK. This is their second number one single. And also, for the first time, an appearance on the US Billboard charts on the Hot Dance Single Sales Chart, number 7.
That's amazing.
Get it, girls. Yeah. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about B-sides in this episode, and I feel like this is probably going to be, out of all the episodes that we've ever done, and this is maybe our 33rd episode, this is going to feature more B-side love.
We never chat about B-sides,
I think,
really.
We do for some of our faves, like the Spice Girls, but when it's this era of the Sugar Babes and it's this fucking good, we have to talk about the B-sides.
I mean, even when they released their first greatest hits, I think they had an online-only, like, B-sides collection.
Oh, it's
like
a horrible name, Joel. Do you remember what it was called? Complete
The Best
Bees.
Of the Bees.
It was called The Complete Bees, but it read as BS.
Oh. But, all right, so that to one side. Literally, and I know we say it all the time, but, like, not everybody has that. Like, as in, you know, not a lot of people do release a B-sides compilation.
I'm ready for Sugar Babes, The Rarities, like what Mariah did.
Yeah, but you'd know what someone in the UK will do, some annoying thing like The Rarities. We're spilling the tea with the Sugar Babes. Like, that's not what we want.
Only you would say that, JB.
I wouldn't say that. That's not within my vocabulary. I was saying it on behalf of someone else.
So, yes, Groove is going on. Got to give a shout out to this iconic B-side for the Sugar Babes. Yet another signature bop. And again, you know, we're seeing the girls have a little bit more fun with this laid-back R&B style. I feel like they probably had a whole other album worth of these type of fun hun jams that they're not really serving on the main, but they're giving you on the alt. Joel, we must say, a little discovery for me today. Round Round was covered by a Hong Kong pop star called M.A. Wong, who did a Cantonese version of this single. She released it the following year.
Legend. She didn't just do a cover of that.
What?
She did a cover of something else, didn't she, David?
She did a cover of Emma Bunton's What Took You So Long. and tattoos show me love. Like, this hun is clearly...
This girl's living our dream. Like, we're just saying what would be on JB1, DL1. She's out there doing it. That's what we need to be doing.
Yeah.
So her round round video, there was an element of it that was a bit like... not hot, because it kind of felt like a Saw movie. It was trying to be like cool and edgy, but there were other elements of it and I was like, this is slick, this is hot, she looks hot, there's gorgeous people in the video, there's some great imagery.
It's sexy.
It was dead sexy. There were some bits that weren't dead sexy because it was trying to be edgy, and there were some bits that were dead sexy because it was trying to be edgy. And I just say, like, you know, get me involved.
Okay, so that's that on our cover of the Sugar Babes Round Round. And now we get onto their iconic second album, Angels with Dirty Faces.
Angels with Dirty Faces, released in the UK here, August 2002.
It came out hot on the heels of Round Round. They dropped the album the very same month as the single. I remember looking at this artwork when it came out, Joel, and I just thought, interesting move, because it was, you know, a very 70s, very retro look. It kind of looked like an old Carpenters record to me.
Yeah, you kind of have that visually along all the singles here on this album as well.
Which I really love. That's why I have them on display, honey. That's why I bought them on
CD one and two. Do you have any... I get shit every day still about this Hilary Duff cushion. But I've got a Hilary Duff cushion
cover.
Why
would you get shit for it? It's amazing.
And Alex keeps going, you know that's going in the bedroom soon. I'm like...
No, it needs to be in the living room, public.
Look, she can go and pride a place wherever she needs to be, in the flat, bedroom or living room. I'll still see her every day. So what is interesting is, yeah, it's very cool. It's very We're the Sugar Babes, this imagery, and the single imagery. They're never like... We're shiny girl band, even though some of the songs might lean more, a little bit more towards it.
Mm.
They're still doing their thing and it's still kind of natural and cool.
And it's very interesting that you said that, Joel, because, like, if we think about the music video for Freak Like Me and Round Round, the girls are in, like, black leather outfits looking very kind of Y2K pop star-y. But then the visual and art direction and styling for this album is very... organic, very...
Trip down Camden Market.
JB, shall we get into the album tracks?
Yeah, so I don't have as many, and I'm not... This isn't saying it's a any disrespect on the album, because it's kind of more like, yeah, here we are, it's the Sugar Babes pop album. But I've only got two standout tracks on this album, outside of the singles.
All right, let's hear it.
Supernatural.
You know what? Supernatural is the one for me as well. I have to be honest with this album. I didn't buy it, but I went to the local library. If you've listened to a podcast, you know that this is a recurring theme. At a certain point in my life, I went to the local libraries a lot and sometimes would borrow CDs and would cherry pick tracks from there to rip on my home PC. So Supernatural was definitely one of the few Sugar Babes album tracks that I ripped from this copy.
When you'd rip them, did you cherry pick a few just because you didn't have much room, or did you feel like, oh well, it's not stealing completely if I just take a few?
No, it wasn't a moral reason, because I was already stealing. It was more like, do I have space in my heart and in my life for these songs? You know, I'm a migrant. We're very savvy with our resources. We don't want to take up any more space on our PC than we need to with unnecessary MP3s. So it has to be the best of the best album tracks.
My old hard drive, darling, one word, cluttered. It had on it, like, filmed from, like, the back of the cinema, like, dodgy copies of, like, Hilary Duff films, Mandy Moore films, episodes of Charmed. Did you not have, like, LimeWire or Kazaa, and they would just download forever?
I never downloaded music videos, let alone
movies,
TV series or movies. My internet was so slow, Joel.
But yeah, I remember always thinking, like, at the library with music CDs, I'm like, Is anyone really just taking this out and listening to it once? Like, come on now.
Fucking hell, Monash Library is going to come after me now.
I actually thought that the other day. I was like, what was that? I can't even remember what I was doing or what I was thinking, but I was like, oh, I was walking to Co-op and I just saw the police walk past and like a little bit of me thought, oh God, here they are. Like, as in terms of like, it made me think of like, were you a kid and did you ever like lie awake at night and worry about the fact that you've downloaded from LimeWire or ripped from the library?
And you know, back in the day, those DVDs that you would rent from like Blockbuster or whatever would have those messages at the start.
You wouldn't commit a crime. You wouldn't steal from a shop.
I love that it haunts you in 2020 when you're going to co-op still.
Here they are. I'm over here. It was a long time ago. I've paid for my sins.
Can you imagine? The cop car pulls up and I'm like, yeah, you illegally downloaded that Natasha Bedingfield album. So we're just going
to... Do not put that on my record. I did not. Search again. It was Ashley Simpson.
So, yeah, that was me with my encounter with Angels with Dirty Faces. I saw it in the library and I knew the singles. At this point that I picked it up, I knew Shape was a single and I knew obviously Round Round. So that piqued my curiosity and I picked it up, and certain album tracks made it on my family PC. Certain ones didn't.
Do you think they're still on there today?
Oh, can you imagine my dad going through his like Hillsong music? Supernatural, yeah, that's about Jesus. Dum-da-dum-da-dum-da-dum-da-dum-da-dum. So we must say Supernatural is produced by one of our favourite Y2K pop producers, Bloodshine Avant, who has worked on Vitamin C's second album, The VC.
Yes.
Samantha Mumba's I'm Right Here, Britney's Toxic in Later Years.
Never heard of it.
JB, what was your other album track fave?
My other album track was More Than a Million Miles.
Oh, interesting.
You got Sugar Babes, you got pop, you got R&B, you got a rap. It's all going on.
Really?
All right, don't make you feel like I've been called in for a meeting with the teacher. Speaking of re-listens, I did notice that on the Forever episode, you heavily cut down my live vocals.
Of what? Which part?
Time goes by, but we stand still.
I did include that. I did. Maybe not the full 3 minute 52 version, but it was in there.
It wasn't as present as I remember.
It wasn't the full body of work.
No. And I will not be edited like this. I will not be silenced. So what were your standouts from this album, David? And remember, obviously, everyone, we're not talking about the singles.
So apart from Supernatural, I have to say I really enjoyed Breathe Easy, the acoustic jam version, which kind of got me thinking at the time of me listening to the album. I was like, did I miss an official version?
But so I think it was a B-side earlier on.
It was a B-side early on. But me as a kid in Australia who didn't get the singles, I was just like, okay, I don't know the original, but thanks for the acoustic version. I'll take
it. If they ain't got it in the library, I don't have it.
How many times we've walked the streets, talking for ages about the people we're gonna be. We've been waiting for a change, but I don't mind if it don't change, baby. Though it might seem crazy, but I'm happy with you this way.
Gorgeous stripped back vocals. And, you know, there are times in a family car trips where I used to make lots of mix CDs for my mom and dad. I would always put Breathe Easy on both my parents' mix CDs because I know that will go down well, because it just kind of has that simplicity and that just gorgeous vocals.
That's so lovely. Yeah, I used to like, I like making mix CDs and curating them and everything was my favourite thing ever.
Did you make mix CDs for your mum?
I don't think I ever made my mum a mix CD because she just wouldn't listen. Like, so no one would really want them. It was all for me only, really. I'd play them a lot in my dad's car if we would do something, like if I was seeing him.
This is something I've really missed in 2020, because it used to be that, like, when we were all in the office and I would take over the office stereo, and it was never like an official time or like a moment. I would just slide in when it feels like it's quiet.
Time for some bops.
I like to just gauge the mood of the office and I would play stuff. And, you know, it can vary from like Dusty Springfield to A1. Like, I just kind of go with the flow. So I kind of miss that, really, because I like playing music for other people.
Yeah, I miss on my old job before this one, we would do like themed playlists. Like if we felt like energy was low or something, we'd be like, all right, themed playlist, everyone. Do an open playlist on Spotify and the theme is this. But yeah, it was just always fun and to hear everyone else's and be like, who's put this on? Who's put that on? Or like, oh, Joel. And then sometimes I'd be like, no, that wasn't me, actually.
Tina Marie, who was that? Joel. Oh, shock. It's not S Club Juniors.
They're coming up next, darling.
Range, Heidi Range. Okay, so going back to the album, sorry guys for the segue, but you know, this is what it's like. You're on a journey with us here on Right Back At You, and we will get right back to the topic at some point.
Yeah, but you know, look, it's 2020. Let us have this. We need to indulge in each other.
Exactly, and indulge with us as well.
Did you have any thoughts when you listened to this album and look back at listening to the first album? I think we're in a very kind of different place. A natural progression, but a different place.
It's a coming of age record. I actually think that, like, maybe the Sugar Babes weren't expecting what a big hit they would have with Freak Like Me and Round Round, and the rest of the album was just kind of trying to catch up with that.
I think the first album is a brilliant album and still is, and I think this album was a brilliant album, but very of the time. That's not to discredit it. It's still a great album, and it's got bloody bangers on it. So this was a number two here in the UK. Could have been a number one if I just bought it. Who knows?
The album spent 18 weeks in the top 20 and it's certified 3 times platinum.
Wow. Also 178 in Japan and 21 in New Zealand, and charted absolutely in everywhere along Europe and around the world. And let's see where it was in Australia. Australia, number 5, but on the Hit Seekers album charts.
Not even on the main charts, hun.
So let's move on from the album, David, to the next single, which was a double A-side, Stronger and Angels with Dirty Faces.
Let's do Stronger first.
Oh, okay. I've got Angels with Dirty Faces first in my notes, but that's fine. I'm easygoing. I'll talk about Stronger first.
Now, this one is so iconic for the fact that Heidi's vocal in the bridge is still like a little bit of a Twitter meme.
Me.
It is quite iconic for that reason. Now, I just love Stronger. I actually think Stronger is probably in my top 5 Sugar Babes favorite songs. And I think Keisha even said that, like, this was one of the more personal, one of the first more personal songs that she wrote as part of the group.
You know the way I treat ballads. I don't know if I put it in my top 5, but it is gorgeous. And it's a fantastic, it really shows off all the girls. It shows off what the Sugar Babes do brilliantly. So also, what we have to talk about, what I was shocked and what my memory did not recall at all was Heidi's big hair and pole dancing. Oof, my eyes nearly popped out of my head.
But honey, like for me, it was always the most iconic scene in this video. And this is the first time we're seeing the girls really do a little bit more acting in their music videos.
Let's get her booked for the UK tour stage adaption of Showgirls. Let's get Bill Kenwright on the phone. Let's get Martine McCutcheon to play the Crystal Connors role. Heidi can play the lead role played by Elizabeth Berkley. Let's make it happen.
But absolutely iconic. We love it. And shall we talk about the next single?
Let's talk about the other side of this double A side, Angels with Dirty Faces. Obviously the title track of the album. Sexy, classy, don't make it better past me. Angels in the tape, better not, they could be nasty. Keisha, man, I had the fellas left on us. Montia, when I play around with them, my dice. Heidi, he didn't know he was a freak until he let me out to fucking go. Keep your hands to the beat and shake it down. So this, to go from that sort of edgy, more music video, this is a lot more kid-friendly. The song itself was used for the Powerpuff Girls movie. We have a full animated video here of the girls in a Powerpuff Girls world. It's a recreation of one of the episodes of the TV show. And this music video was played before the movie in cinemas.
Amazing. And you know what? To me, this is just a really savvy business decision for the Sugar Babes, because I think they saw Stronger as the lead single, but also Angels with Dirty Faces was having such a commercial moment. It would be a shame to not have it as the double billing because it was getting that much attention. But in this era, from memory, it was always about Stronger, and I almost never saw anything about Angels with Dirty Faces in Australia.
Yeah, so I have to say, for me, this is like the discovery bop of the episode. I have never paid this.
Really?
I've never paid this song any attention before.
Yeah, this is like another gritty Xenomania banger on the album. And this is the other thing, you know, we said that it was like quite interesting that Richard X gave them the first single. It was a big hit, but there was no other Richard X songs. But also there's only two Xenomania songs on this album. So it's kind of like, why didn't we have more of these moments? It kind of felt like they were maybe just working out what is gonna gel, maybe.
So let's talk about the double A side, because in some places it releases a double A side and some places just Stronger is released. So in terms of double A side, we have in the UK here at number 7.
Their third consecutive UK top 10 hit.
Another smash hit for the babes. So 7 in the UK, 24 in New Zealand and 34 in Australia. Now Stronger was released on its own in other territories. We've got 41 in Austria, 20 in Belgium and 5 in Belgium on their two charts respectively, 11 in Denmark, 13 in Ireland. I don't believe it was released on its own in Ireland. We've got to see what's going on there, Wikipedia.
So also we must say, before we leave the year 2002 for the Sugar Babes, they really in this year were very iconic in the sense that they started to do more tours and play more festivals. And one of the tours that we're very interested in is the Smash Hits tour that they were part of. So it was Sugar Babes, which I guess they were sort of headlining because it kind of looked like they closed the shows. There was Sugar Babes, there was Blazin' Squad, Busted, Samantha Mumba, Darius, Liberty X, H and Claire, and my darling, Danny Minogue.
I mean, imagine being there. Imagine seeing that.
Icons only.
Yeah, so also Sarah Watmore was there. You're automatic.
Yeah, what a tour to be on for the girls. And also, there's this really hilarious YouTube clip of the girls on tour with Blazing Squad where we see an emerging presenter slash vlogger, Keisha Buchanan.
From the toilet.
From the toilet, spilling the tea on Mutia's love life. She was like, oh yeah, a member of Blazing Squad really fancies Mutia, and he doesn't think that we know.
And then they're like at the nail salon talking about it all. And then Heidi's just, oh, Tom's lovely. Oh, they're all really sweet boys. Actually, the Blazing Squad boys. And then the other girls are like, yeah, what they don't realise is that they all, what Heidi doesn't realise is that they all fancy Heidi.
And they're just asking her for advice on dating us when they really just want to get to know her.
I think they're all lovely boys.
Love it. And also in 2002, the girls were nominated for a MOBO Award for UK Act of the Year. And they also did a performance of Round Round, the Shawnee B remix, which had the DJ kind of shouting over the top of
quite
it.
Quite the performance.
I was like, oh, okay, this is not the version of Round Round that I know.
Dance routine. Edge. It was like Hun's Night Out, Girls Night Out, Hun's Night Out at the MOBO Awards.
So Smash Hits Poll Winners Award, the Sugar Babes were nominated for Best Band, Best Single for Round Round, and they won Best Album for Angels with Dirty Faces.
I'd love to be an EGOT winner, but the magnum opus is a Smash Hits Award. Like, that's it.
And let's fast forward to February 2003 when the Sugar Babes, now this is the big one, the Brit Awards, where they were nominated for three categories, British Group, British Album of the Year, and the girls won Best British Dance Act, which in my mind, I was just like mind blown. A, it's great that the Sugar Babes are recognised, but also Dance Act?
That's quite mad because Jamiroquai, it feels like Jamiroquai was quite untouchable in that kind of ether at that time.
But also, like, look at this category, Groove Armada, Chemical Brothers. What was the Sugar Babes doing in there? I feel like if it weren't for a Freak Like Me being the record, like the big kind of standout record of that year, would the Sugar Babes ever have been in the dance category?
Look.
What a night it was.
What a night. Their mums were there. That was so lovely.
And the winner is... It's upside down. We saw him earlier, it's the Sugar Babes.
So this is the Sugar Babes' first Brit Award, and it is fair to say that the girls really deserve to win this one. And if you look very carefully, right about now, you can actually see them smiling.
Oh my God. We really weren't expecting to win. We really weren't expecting to win, seriously. But first of all, we'd like to thank God, and we'd like to thank our family. Our mummy's up there.
So shall we move on to the next and also the final single of this episode for us?
The final single of the Angels with Dirty Faces era, a song called Shape. Now, this is a remake slash sample slash remake of Sting's 1993 song Shape of My Heart. But this has different verses and then a chorus that does feature Sting on re-recorded vocals, because according to Mutia, he felt he could do better with the chorus, so he came in and re-recorded it.
I don't think so, Sting, with the greatest respect. Should have left it.
You're now part, you're doing a vocal with the Sugar Babes, you got to step it up.
And you can easily gamble your life away, second after second and a day by day. You play the game or you walk away.
It's a new turn on a blue day.
And you can easily gamble your life away, second after second and a day by day. You play the game or you walk away.
It's a new turn on a blue day. And a cool deal of life for me.
I'll be honest with you, I didn't know the Sting original, so my way into this melody, into this song, was the Sugar Babes version. And we all know that Craig David ended up doing a sample slash cover of it as well. I think maybe the following year.
No, it was released a few weeks later.
Literally a few weeks later, really? Yeah. Craig David.
I mean, what did Sting need for that tax year? He must have, like, needed to fill some budget somewhere. I'll do the Sugar Babes, I'll re-record on it, and then I'll appear in the Craig David song. Like, it was just, I do think that's a bit cheeky, considering he was involved in both.
Yeah, and they were both in the same territory. It's not like, oh, I'm doing something for a Hong Kong pop star, I'm going to do something for, like, a Venezuelan pop star. No, honey, cheeky of Sting.
Yeah, cheeky. And where's your bloody collab with the Cheeky Girls, Sting? That's what we want. This has never been one of my favourite Sugar Babe songs at all. It's definitely one I normally always skip over.
No.
But I did really enjoy it in preparation for this episode.
I think I was just needing a little more of that kind of soulful moment. Bear in mind, in this era of the Sugar Babes, I didn't know the first album. So I was just like, yeah, after getting into Round Round, I want a little bit more mid-tempo from the Sugar Babes. And this single gave it to me at that time as a kid. Yeah.
I'm very happy for you.
The music video is gorgeous, as you said. It was shot in Sydney, Australia, in December 2002, while the girls were out there on tour doing Rumba Music Festival. Again, JB, we have to say the Atomic Kitten music video comparisons came in a few years later.
With what? Remind me, sorry.
You know how in this video they were like naked with the butterflies?
Right.
And then like Atomic Kitten with If You Come To Me, that music video, they had butterflies around their modesties.
Right.
People were like, oh, that's a ripoff of the Sugar Babe Shape.
Right. And who was doing these comparisons, you or
me?
Other people? Let's talk about chart positions. So while the male Craig David got a number one with his song, our fabulous hardworking girls got a top number 11 here in the UK with this song. Sting clearly didn't put it on whatever the equivalent to Twitter was at that time.
He didn't do a pre-record for Amazon. No Alexa play Sting and Sugar Babes. Nothing. He didn't do
no
that.
No TikTok. No Snapchat. Nothing.
Nothing.
He didn't do nothing to help the promo, and we said, look, Sting, the song's all right. We're happy to sample it and that, but if you want to be on it, you got to re-record your vocal, really, if you want to fit in with the three girls. We really felt like Shape could have built it up, but as we say, it was the fourth single off the album, which was a number two smash hit, and we've won a Brit Award, so look, who can complain, really? Look, David, two lineups, two albums, a whole lot of hit singles.
A Brit Award.
A Brit Award, two number one hits.
This literally is only the beginning for us and the Sugar Babes. Hopefully you guys like this episode and we can go on and do a few more.
And I feel like we haven't even got started talking about them.
Mm.
You know, look, we're third season strong. We've got to give you guys some of the big hitters. You know, you guys want it. We want to give it to you. It's about time. We are at Right Back Pod on all socials, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. If you're enjoying what we're doing, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And I'm at Dr_JoelB on all socials, and he is
at Love Limmy.
See you soon. Bye.